The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. Ladies and gentlemen, RPA is proud to present Aaron's Horror Show with Aaron Frail.
This is Jason Witter, author, illustrator of Tiny East Vampire and Monsters Eating Ice Cream, and you are listening to Aaron's Horror Show.
Welcome to Aaron's Horror Show. I'm your host, Aaron Frail. On Aaron's Horror Show, we're going to go ahead and read some horror fiction and talk about horror in all its forms, books, movies, you name it. If you want to go ahead and get a hold of the show, you can go ahead and contact Aaron's Horror Show at Gmail or Aaron Horror Show on Twitter or Aaron's Horror Show on Facebook. Thank you for listening and enjoy. All right. Well, let me go ahead and introduce you so we can find, so the audience can know who these fine folks we have are. So Jen Doherty and Philip Hughes comprise the Workshop, a creative company that focuses on storytelling through a variety of media, including podcasting, film, and literature. Currently, they are in season one of The Workshop Presents, a full cast storytelling podcast where each season presents an original story. They are also preparing to release their award-winning feature film, The Married Maids of Madness, on several streaming outlets. They have been in a creative partnership for almost 13 years, spanning from New York to Japan. All right. Well, welcome to the show.
It's very fancy.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. I did it my best announcer voice.
This just in. Philip Jett.
Tell them a little bit about The Workshop Presents. What is it? What are you doing?
So The Workshop Presents is basically the company that we kind of umbrella everything under. And so right now we're doing a podcast. And the first story we're doing with that, this is our inaugural story, right?
Yeah.
Is The Doldrums Holiday Special, which is about a little boy, Mew, who comes into contact with the creatures, the Doldrums.
The flavor of it is that there's actually a holiday that Jen invented, and I think will actually become a great holiday at some point, but it's called the Doldrums Days, and it basically celebrates how terrible January is as a month.
Yeah, I liked that. I listened to the first episode, I felt that it was very channeling Lemony Snicket with the the sort of dark humor, you know, and I felt it had more of a Christmas magic to it too, even though it's like, this is the dark, depressing January and why it is dark and depressing, you know?
You described my inner state.
No, you know what's really... Oh, no, it's just really funny that we're going to be, like, sitting here giggling and laughing on this interview, and people are going to go to the podcast and be like, oh, man.
Oh, man.
That's dark.
Your editor is going to have a fun time with this, with all the giggling. So
yes, yes.
Something that audiences should know is that when Aaron and Jen get together, like I call them the Giggle Twins, because they just feed off each other's laughter nonstop, and especially if they have something funny to be interacting with. Oh man, it's the best.
we're not allowed to watch The Three Amigos around Phil anymore.
No. For those of you listening, we had this moment where Phil was trying to, like, study. I forgot. It was back in college. Like, he was trying to study for something, and Jen and I were watching The Three Amigos. And,
on the bed
we just kept,
in my room.
Yes, 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 while he was trying to do this task. All right, so when you're doing the workshop presents, or when you're doing the doldrums, what kind of made you think of that story? Like where does the inspiration for it come?
Well, first it was that I wanted to create a holiday for January, because I don't know, if we were talking to Aaron knows our mutual friend Jason, and we were just talking about how January was just the worst. It's just the worst. Like, everything's cold, no one's happy anymore. It's like all of a sudden that, like, happiness of the holidays, everyone goes like, and I'm done.
Like, not only are they not completing their New Year's promises, New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. From October and Halloween
till New Year's.
Till New Year's, we use up like all of our happy, and then like all of our happy is gone, and then we have to like rebuild it so that we can use it again the next year. And so it was like I wanted to create something that made January a little bit more palatable for people,
and a little bit more, fun. A little bit more fun. I would say that, like, listening from what I've heard so far of it, I think, you know, being a father myself, I think it would be a great show to show my son one day when he's old enough to you know, he's only one, so he doesn't really understand.
He doesn't understand words and things yet.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit in the style of, like, one of the old Rankin Bass holiday specials, you know, things like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, and, you know, things like that that we were also kind of channeling. So it was fun, but then, of course, Jen, being Jen, it's got a little bit of the dark, spooky
because
side
I
to it.
I feel like everything I loved when I was a kid was, like, if we're talking movies, it's, like, Secret of Nim, The Last Unicorn, Nightmare Before Christmas, Watership Down, and they're all kind of dark, but that's, like, stuck with. I remember, like, The Black Cauldron. For a while after it came out, I remember seeing it, and then for a while I thought I had just imagined it because it disappeared. Like, Disney did a good job of, like, going, like, this movie never existed. And then it came out again. But that movie was so dark. That movie, and I loved it. I loved it. It made me read the books, all that kind of stuff. And I feel like sometimes when you scare little kids, it actually gets them to pay attention. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I know. I felt a lot of the kids stuff in the 80s had this real, real dark streak to it, you know?
Yeah.
And I loved it too, you know? I thought, which one is the one with Tim Curry, and he plays kind of like the devil character,
legend.
And he's just legend.
Yeah.
No, I just remember Tim Curry and that little devil thing being absolutely terrifying to me as a kid,
totally.
but also, you know, couldn't take my eyes off of it, you know?
No, it's true. Angelica Houston in The Witches was huge for me. We I remember in third grade, we read the book. I think it was third grade. We watched the movie as well. And I just showed that. So Phil had never seen The Witches before. And when I showed it to him, he was like, this is a kid's movie? This is terrifying. Have you seen it, Aaron?
I haven't. No, I haven't. I'm going to have to watch that.
Oh, it's the best. It is the best. I love it. They shot it. It's almost like, I feel like if Terry Gilliam could have, like, come on and consulted on that movie, because it's so weird.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I'm definitely watching that. I've seen all of Terry Gilliam's movies, so.
Yeah, it's like Gilliam-like.
Yeah.
It's like if he was like, I'm going to go commercial.
so it's Gilliam being a little bit normal.
Yes.
It's like if Gilliam decided to go straight. So when you're thinking of, you know, your characters, because I know this isn't the first series that or the first like story that you've done. You've also had the children of Eldritch Lane, you know, H.P. Lovecraft inspired. When you're thinking of your characters, yeah, where are you taking them from? I know also I want to bring in Phil as well to talk about like the artwork for it too, because I've, you know, there's a lot of really good artwork associated with this podcast as well as the other book, the Eldritch Lane one.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, no, we start our character and go from there. Because, right, for like the art purposes, it made it easy because Jen paints very vivid, fun stuff. And so that always really inspires me a lot.
Yeah. And I feel like with the characters is like, Phil and I actually spend a long time on these things. And I feel like it's just kind of like these really long rap sessions where we sit down and we just talk out these characters and figure out how they work. And it's
okay.
From these sessions, then we can go into the writing after that. And then they come more alive when I sit down. So I have to thank Phil for that. That's kind of his side contribution to my writing, is that we're able to talk about these characters like they're, I don't know, almost like friends. So
yeah, I mean, how do you talk about them, like in the theoretical sense of like what they would do in certain situations, or you talk about their psychology or their history, or like
psychology, you know, and then just. And, you know, part of, like, the story idea is, like, oh, it goes, like, oh, it'd be cool if this happened, what would happen? And then we kind of talk about that. And, you know, or she's sitting there going, like, oh, you know, I was thinking about Bartholomew going and
visiting. Don't give anything away.
This person.
Okay.
I thought I'd break her.
You're gonna have to listen, listeners, to figure out what's happening. So.
Yeah,
but I mean, and so like, oh, it's like, I think you would do this, and I could, you know, sometimes, I mean, Jen usually knows the right answer, but sometimes you go, well, but would they do that? Then they might actually do more like this, or like, oh, wouldn't it be funny? Like, I feel like they would do this, and wouldn't that be funny or weird or whatever?
Well, I almost feel like reading Stephen King's book on writing, when he talked about like, the relationship that he has with his wife, with Tabitha. And the way that she's like his ideal reader. And so I just took that another step forward. And like, as I'm going through my ideas, I almost kind of storytell to Phil. Like, this is almost me just telling Phil stories. I like that idea. But.
Yeah. And especially, and that's super fun on the things that we do where we're more like both writing together on it, is that we're kind of like, oh, but what if then this happened? And the person's like, oh, that's great, but then what if this happened? You know, and it's super fun.
And once in a while, it's, what if this happens? Oh, that should not happen.
Yeah. Not so much.
Yeah, I'll say something, and I'll be like, and this? And so his nose will crinkle, and my nose will crinkle, and we're like, oh, no. No, that's wrong.
Like, without even words, you know that there is something very wrong with what with what you just said.
We angered.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
So how long does it take to, like, come up with that? I mean, because I know that's a lot of work that you're putting in ahead of time before you even put words on the page.
I think, for the Doldrums, how long have they been working on this one?
Oh.
I think this came right after Maid. Like, we started working on it.
So, like, 2 or 3 years?
Two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, and actually, one of the best things, actually, through the podcast has been, like, actually hearing my words out loud, like, multiple times, like, before we get it out there, has really, like, made my editing, I feel like, on my writing even better. So
you feel like your prose is, like, a lot crisper and stuff like that because you get a chance to, like, edit it before you,
right?
Before you put it out.
Totally, and it's something that Jen does anyway. Is that for stuff that she's writing, it's that she'll read it to me, you know. And she just gets something. You know, Jen being an actor, I think it really helps for her just to hear it. And so it's never like she just gives me pages to read. She's like, "Oh, let me read it to you, and then give me your feedback on it."
Yeah.
You know?
But what the nice thing with the podcast is that now I'm reading to myself.
So you could actually hear.
Yeah, and I'll hear a part of prose, and I'm like, oh, man, are you serious? Jennifer.
So have you actually re-recorded stuff and rewritten stuff based on in the editing? So in the editing bay, you're like, no, we're doing this again.
Okay, this is not okay.
It could be a little better, you know.
Yeah. So I make it sound like it's like, yeah. Remember, I'm done.
No. Yes. Yeah. No, I know what you mean, though. I've been on this podcast here. I've been reading some of my own work to the listeners, and I rewrite it as I'm reading it, because I'll read something and I'll be like, wow, that's terrible. I got to redo this. You know?
No, I think that's actually, it's a really good strength, you know, to be able to go in and go like, oh, on all, it's like finding new levels of going, oh shit.
Yeah, I know.
That's almost like the writer. Like battle cry. Oh shit.
It is. Oh, yeah.
Do you swear on here? Is this clean?
No, you could swear. This is my boat. I can run it out if I want. I don't necessarily swear.
Okay.
On a general marker, excessively, just so you know, because I what I don't want it is to be like, if I'm, you know, the podcast becomes about the swearing, whereas, you know, if swearing shows up naturally, that's fine. It's just how people talk, you know. But people don't, you know, go into McDonald's and be like, I want a fucking burger, you know. Give me a fucking number one goddamn fries with that, you know.
It's McDonald's. In McDonald's.
Well, it's a fries, bruh.
That was for listeners that you remember, Jason, our friend, with Hamlet the Vampire Slayer. That was Phil's character that he was channeling there.
Oh, yeah.
Phil played, it was Rosen, Chad, and Gildenbrad. Or was that it?
Oh, no.
No,
I played the earlier version of that from the show.
You played it in the play.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was in
Dracula.
Dracula Goes to College.
And so that was like the first. That was the first version of those two dudes.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
He left. This is their game. Your listeners are getting to hear all the crazy titles, because that was Dracula Goes to College. We left to go to Japan when you guys were doing Batman Starts.
Oh, yes. Batman Starts or something.
I saw that play right before we moved, and that was hilarious. I love Batman Starts.
That one was actually the only play of ours that somebody attempted to shut down. Like, we got a call from DC's lawyers, you know.
Whoa!
Like, yeah, they said, like, you can't do this play. We're thinking it's like a lousy 100-seat theater, you know.
Yeah, come on down, and I want you to see what a threat this is to you guys.
Exactly. Christian Bale's fortune is threatened by this moment here. So let's actually, speaking of movies, let's talk about Merry Maids of Madness. You made a movie.
What?
You made a movie.
We did. It was a crazy, crazy endeavor. Phil was at USC his final year, and if you know anything about the program at USC, you go for 3 years studying film.
This is the grad program.
This is the grad program. And during those 3 years, you have a chance to shoot a short film there. And we weren't really interested in that, because we mainly, our love is character, and character comes out really well in long form.
Yeah.
And so we had this moment where we're like, we don't care about making, like, it's a great program, but we didn't care about making the short film.
Like, we weren't going to buy for that, because that's one of those ones where it's very Hunger Games to try to get one of those intermediate short film projects.
And we're like, okay, well, what can we do what do we feel like coming out of this school would be really like a calling card for us? And so we decided to make the Merry Maids Madness, and shot it over Phil's Christmas break.
Yeah, on my final year.
Oh, wow.
My final semester, I missed the first 3 days of classes, which at USC, if you miss the first day, you're out. If you're already registered for the class.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a pitch class, which was run by someone who is Wolfgang Peterson's partner, producing partner. And I wrote to her and was like, please, I'm shooting a movie. Can I please come into class? I mean, like, because this is a class that you couldn't get until like your last semester. And so it wasn't always easy to get into. I was like, please let me take this class. You know, I'll be a great student. And she did. And she was very, very kind to do that because she definitely didn't have to.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
the only reason she would have, like, given it to you, and it's the reason why, is because you were like, I'm shooting a feature.
Yeah.
yeah.
Because at least he's, like, out doing the work. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than saying, you know, I was planning on doing a lot of drugs for Christmas holiday.
I was going to go on a trip.
Swim at orcas.
So we made this movie. Jen wrote it and was one of the main stars in it. And I directed. And it was this is comedy. It's a female ensemble comedy about these women who are inspired.
They're in the Shire.
And it's set in a mental ward.
In modern day,
yeah.
And it's a comedy.
And they are with Jason, and then obviously we all have this super fun love to take Shakespeare and play around with it.
Yeah. The Jason that we're talking about, Maids, is going to be coming out on streaming very soon. If you tune in, he is the orderly Barry in it, and he is very funny. So.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it yet, but from the previews, he looks great. I mean, I've missed out on it because I don't think there's been access to it.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a moment where one of the other characters is playing guitar and Jason listens wistfully to it, and it is for you, Doctor. That shot.
I'm excited.
We'll get hooked up with some VIP link. You know?
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, that'd be fun.
We shot it over 15 days, 8 of which were in a row.
Which is
If it was that's intense.
It wouldn't have happened, or it would have cost an ungodly amount of money in payroll. But we were a super low budget. Nani and Aaron was volunteering their time.
And the casting crew. We lost our main location because we had a studio that we're going to shoot at that had a medical set on it. But they got closed down 2 weeks before we shot in Albuquerque.
Home.
And so we were like, okay, we have to find a place. So we went running around everywhere, and we found this really great school that's downtown. Amy Beale, you probably know it. It's the charter.
Oh, yeah. I was a substitute teacher there, actually.
And so it's a beautiful building.
It's great.
And so I think the reason why, I mean, the cast and crew knew what we were going through with that. And we were always very careful to keep our days to like 12 hours at all costs, unless something terrible happens.
Or we're in a spot where literally we can't come back.
Yes, exactly. And so they.
Oh, wow.
we hit our fifth day, and we every day we're like, we hope they come tomorrow.
We'd really like our actors to come back.
Yes, and they did, and they were great. And I think it really shows. What I really try to push is that there's great actors everywhere. You know, and Albuquerque is one of those because, like, there's been such a community there and the film industry there that there's been this group of actors that have been really, I don't know, like, kind of brought up through the system now. And they're really.
Oh, yeah.
They're really.
Well, there are just so many highly talented people in Albuquerque that I feel it's very untapped, you know, like.
Yes.
You know, I feel. Like when I do see someone I know, I'm like, why don't they have a bigger role than that? You know, like.
I felt like I went back there, and one of the agents back in New Mexico, I talked to her. I said, thank you for letting me use your actors, and thank you for being, you know, so obliging and everything. And she was like, oh, she goes, you cast all my best ones.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things. It's there's so many good actors in Albuquerque. Like, we just had auditions again, and, like, the people who came out, I'm just like, oh, my gosh. No, I just wish, I really wish for Albuquerque, I want them to become the new Austin, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Like, music and film and just all the arts are in Albuquerque.
Well, because of that strong film presence, you know, but
yeah.
To go.
Sorry, I'm being wistful.
Yeah.
I'm being focused.
Well,
on.
I mean,
sorry.
Also, like, yeah, I mean, also, I remember Jason and I used to talk about how Albuquerque was such a great city to get something really big done, but also not have to, like fight for that limited resources like one would have to do in L.A. or something, you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah, like it, and because L.A., it's just a business out here, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's important.
But it just, it makes it hard when you don't have the resources, because they're in an environment where they've always had people come to them who did have the resources. So things like location fees are always, like, higher, and people are always like, oh, no, I have to get paid for this. You know, you're like, oh, we're doing a two-day shoot, and we have, like, $11, you know? It's like we're just
yeah.
doing our best to make something great that everybody can take advantage of to show, like, their craftsmanship.
Well, gosh, like, we were talking about this morning, we were talking about Roger Corman, and the documentary they made about him, because we haven't seen it yet, but I want to check it out. And just, like, we watched the clip of Jack Nicholson talking about, like, just how Roger was so innovative just in getting the work done. Because, like, he would find out that, like, a big-budget movie had shot on a stage and that they were going to tear it down in 3 days. And he was like, okay, I'll write a script and we'll go make a movie in, like, you know, 2 days, which I don't think that's the best way to make art, but, you know, but
still,
like,
that's,
yeah,
like, wow. Just knowing how difficult it is to make a movie, but to do it in, you know, like make a movie with, like, a lot of time and, you know, planning, but to do it so quickly, you know.
And Jack Nicholson was in tears about it, because he was like, this was a guy, he was my lifeblood for when he had no career and he was getting started. And I think almost like the everyday artists today, the people who are, like, you know, the working class artists, we have to, like, be those kind of, you know, beacons that were like, yeah, I know it's hard, but we keep the power that we have is to make our own work. Sorry, I'm getting real.
No, I know. You're like, we got to add something dark here. So quick, artists that you know that committed suicide, go. That was a joke, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just do musicians. It'll last a while.
Or Chris Cornell.
Which is funny, because it's all about mental illness.
It is. It's kind of my way of, like, Carrie Fisher always said that, like, if life wasn't funny, it would just be real, and that's not okay. I think I was going, like, just learning about, like, life and how the brain works and everything like that, and Maids came out of that, so.
Yeah, I mean,
that's awesome.
You know, and for us, it was important that we did make it funny, because, you know, speaking of Jack Nicholson, you know, One Flew Over Cuckoo's Nest is out there. Girl Interrupted are out there. They did it just about as well as you can do it. So why don't we try to explore something like this with more of a fun human approach to it?
Well, I guess.
Because the thing is, you know, we're not dealing with an institution where it's people who almost can't function because of the mental illness they have to deal with. You know, we're dealing with the fact that, like, all of us are, you know, there's a very fine line between kind of us getting through the day and us being a divergent,
yeah,
you know, and, like, and that's what a lot of people think, like, you know, mental illness is just about, like, going crazy and smearing your own poo on a wall and things like that. Hey, you know,
no, but there is an image that's been put out.
It is.
That.
I'm like,
no, it is. It is. Yeah, it's the unfortunate image that people have or think of because of, you know.
Yeah, you know, media and where they talked about therapy, and they were like, this, you know, like, therapy was considered or is considered within, like, certain parts of my family, is considered a weakness. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you guys, come on.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's funny because, like, mental illness, it even in the word illness, you know, illness implies something treatable. And we don't necessarily say that, oh, you got a case of bronchitis that you had to be hospitalized for. That's a weakness, you know? Like, we don't consider
right.
that.
Like,
you got
a case of the doldrums.
Like, it's so funny. Like,
yeah.
Like, we're willing to talk about people going to the hospital, like with bronchitis. Like, it's like, oh gosh, he's got bronchitis right now. How bad? Oh, let's send flowers. Let's make him feel better. But someone has an emotional problem, they're like, don't talk about it. Don't bring it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Don't tell the family about it. You know, like, let's sweep it under the rug. And
yeah, and it's just it's unhealthy because it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it doesn't. No. Well, it's unfortunate because people in that position that have mental illness or are dealing with issues of mental illness, they don't have the ability to talk about it in a way that would be helpful or productive with their family and the people that should, you know, be willing to be there for them or help them through it, you know? So yeah. I feel that there's a stigma that is, gets in the way of helping someone who really needs help, you know?
Yeah. And the hardest thing that I've learned is that when one person decides to get better, everyone else decides to get better too, or they decide not to get better. So,
but then they're fractured.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Unpack that. Ooh. I'm curious. Unpack that idea.
Oh, on that idea?
Yeah, or just
oh.
tell us.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
unpack it a little for us.
What it is I think when people, you can. Let's see, what is the easiest way to put this? Because it's a lot. Is that when there are problems within, like, a family structure or within something, a lot of times there's, like, the feeling of don't talk about it. Let's not talk about our feelings. Let's not talk about what's wrong. It doesn't, like I said, it doesn't make the problem go away. And
yeah.
those kinds of things, those hurt you, you know, that it's not okay. Like, you have this,
yeah.
You may pretend it's not there, but you think about it, you know, and that eats away at you. And that's happening to the whole group because the group isn't, it's like, it's almost like a company. Like, if you think of a family structure and then you think about it as if it was Google. And if you had one person within Google who was acting like a tyrant or acting like, let's see, controlling
toxic.
Or toxic, let's say that, toxic. But within the family, sometimes there's no communication skills. While, like, in a company, they're like, oh, well, let's bring in someone to, like, talk to everybody and figure this out and fix the communication because the communication is key. But then within a family, how do you do that? Because you mentioned to a family, you're like, I think we should all go to therapy. And they're like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Conversation.
And so then if one person kind of acknowledges and really sees, like, a kind of a toxic dynamic in the family that's, like, kind of been just built up and basically programmed, and they start to pull from that, you know, it might be hard for the people who are enmeshed in it tighter to really see what the deal is, and then that can create friction.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, no one wants to be mad at each other, but it's like, you know, if you got the one person going, like, hey, like, what's happening here is not okay, and it takes a lot to actually see what that is, and, like, people aren't ready to see it, then they're like, what? There's not that. I don't see this problem you're talking about, and then they're resistant, and again, we go back to the before-mentioned friction.
We're writing a family drama right now.
Yeah.
Wow. Good. I can tell.
Yeah, I'm spearheading it as a family epic right now.
So actually, that's like when we talked about how we talk about character, that's actually kind of how we wrap it out.
Yeah.
So this conversation is actually sort of, if I were a fly on the wall of your writing room, this is what you would be talking about right now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like every day.
All right, that was Phil and Jen. If you guys are listening, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was such a great interview that I'm going to have to break it up into three different parts. So come back next week for the next part. If you're interested in their podcast, the link will be in the show notes. And I just want to remind you that Real Paranormal Activity is on Mondays. I'm on Tuesdays. Terry's Mysterious Moments is on Wednesdays. And finally, The Sandman's Lullaby is coming soon to a podcast for you. Near you.